And on a beautiful night here at the Coliseum, the lights have taken full effect.
Welcome to Taking Effect, an Oakland A's podcast with Ken Korak. Now, with an inside look at the A's, here's Ken.
Sean Doolittle's baseball career has almost been the story of two lives. He was drafted by the A's out of the University of Virginia as a first baseman and rose to AAA as one of the best prospects in the system before a knee and then a wrist injury derailed a hugely promising career. And as Sean explains in this interview, he was face-to-face with the end of his life in baseball. But he made a speedy transition to pitching, something he was used to doing going back to his college days, but still starting in single-A ball and winding up as a key member of the A's bullpen during their great second-half run in 2012 was a remarkable professional transformation. Sean's interests and work off the field, much of it in conjunction with his girlfriend Erin Dolan, has been well chronicled, so much so that ESPN.com recently dubbed him the most interesting man in baseball. His intellectual curiosity knows no boundaries, and his desire to make a difference has made him not just an interesting man, but one whose esteem around the game seems to grow with every day. And speaking of days, he'll have a day of sorts on the A's next homestand when the Doolittle Metallica Gnome with Sound is the giveaway for 15,000 fans on the 30th of April when the A's meet the Astros. I sat down with Sean at the end of the A's last homestand, the day after he allowed a ninth-inning home run to Eric Hosmer that sealed the Royals' 4-2 win over the A's. But for Sean Doolittle, there was solace in knowing that after missing most of the 2015 season with a shoulder injury, he's healthy and throwing with no restrictions this year.
Yeah, what a weird roller coaster year it's been already. I mean, we're only, 10 or 11 games in at this point, and I feel like I'm throwing the ball well. I made a couple mistakes, but, I spent a lot of time looking at film and stuff like that, and I've really only given up, up to this point, three hard-hit balls all year. Unfortunately, all three of them left the ballpark, and two of them came at a very, very costly time for the team. But, you know, like you said, I'm healthy. I like the way I'm throwing the ball. I could probably execute a little bit better, be a little crisper. But at the end of the day, it's also an occupational hazard and part of being a reliever. But, you know, I'm feeling good, and the worm will turn sooner than later.
You know, you're one of those guys, I think, who's had a tough go with injuries going back to your time when you were a first baseman. And I know from experience, because I missed the first half of the season last year, Ken Maka used to only half-jokingly talk about guys who were on the DL, that they were non-entities. How disconnected did you feel last year when you were on the DL?
Being on the DL is tough, and I think the mental grind is the hardest part. I mean, you can come in and you can do your exercises and you can get that stuff done, and that stuff's done, you know, normally within 2 or 3 hours. But the mental part of it, like you said, not really feeling like you're a part of the team and not really being able to contribute. You know, you tend to feel sometimes like you're in the way almost. So last year I tried to stay in the background as much as I could, but you know, I also tried to take advantage of the opportunity that I had of, you know, having a front row seat to watch Major League Baseball, and I tried to learn stuff, and I would kind of eavesdrop on conversations in the dugout, and I would watch games from different vantage points that you don't get to watch when you're in the bullpen, or I'd go up in the video room and watch stuff up there and try to pick apart certain things. Or so I tried to learn a lot and tried to, you know, make the most out of that situation that I had, but DL life is tough.
I've talked to ball players who are trying to come back, and when they're rehabbing, they talk about going through like a roller coaster emotionally when you wonder, am I really going to get all the way back? Did that happen for you?
Absolutely. I mean, up until last year, I'd never had an arm injury before. I'd never dealt with any shoulder issues, so I was kind of feeling my way through it, and, you know, you have good days and bad days, and you try not to get too high or too low on yourself, but it gets tough when you know that you're in it for the long haul, and you'll have a day where the ball's coming out really good and your shoulder feels great, and you know, you feel really optimistic, it's only a matter of time before I'm back, and then maybe the next day you come in and it's really cranky, it's tight, it's sore, it's achy, and your mental outlook and your all that optimism that you had the day before, it's tough to hang on to that. And that kind of from day to day, not really knowing how your body's going to feel when you wake up, how it's going to respond to what you did the day before. Like you said, riding that mental roller coaster can be tough sometimes.
Sean, I wanted to go back to your time at Virginia and when the A's drafted you, and then you come up as an athletic in the minor league system as a first baseman, but you also pitched and were a successful pitcher in college. Was it a no-brainer when the A's drafted you that you were going to be a position player back then?
It was. Apparently it was for somebody, but the A's made that decision. That was, I think, Billy and David and his guys decided that they liked me better as a first baseman. And my whole goal when I went to Virginia was one of the few schools that was going to let me pitch and hit. Most schools just wanted me to pitch. And when I went there, my goal was to come out of there and, like, be able to have been a high draft pick at either one of the two and make somebody else make that decision and try to make that decision as difficult as possible for somebody else. And teams were calling me, asking me if I wanted to be a hitter or a pitcher, and I really didn't have a preference. I was enjoying doing what I did at college, and I knew I could only do one at the next level. And most teams saw me as a first baseman, but, you know, for a kid that, you know, we used – that grew up going to games here when he was a little kid, to be drafted by the A's was an awesome experience. That was a very special day.
I remember seeing you in the spring playing first base. Phoenix Beauty, back in the Cactus League, and this was a long time ago now, and I'm not exaggerating that talking to scouts, you were the talk of the spring, at least maybe the top two or three players that they would talk about back then as guys who were on the verge and maybe even a can't miss. Did you feel that a legitimate big-time major league career as a first baseman was just around the corner for you?
Like most kids in their early 20s, I was very confident that I was going
to... Cocky?
A little bit, that I was going to have a long and productive career as a major league first baseman or maybe even a right fielder. I'd started playing some outfield as well, so... But I was able – I got off to a pretty decent start. I mean, I did well in the Arizona Fall League against some pretty good competition. The times I got to spend in big league camp, I swung the bat pretty well. And my second full season in minor league baseball, I was, you know, starting in AAA, hitting in third or fourth in the middle of the order. So, I mean, what did I know? Of course, as a young kid, I mean, you think it's only a matter of time, right, before you get up there. And you don't plan on – you don't plan on the injuries. You think you're invincible, and things happen for a reason, I guess.
What happened with your knee back then?
Well, I was dealing with some – I had some patellar tendonitis. It was something that I was dealing with during spring training that year back in 09, but it started to kind of get progressively worse into the start of the season there in Sacramento in AAA. But it wasn't something that was keeping me from playing. I was still in there. I think I played every game up to the day I got hurt. I fielded a ball in right field, and when I went to crow hop to throw the ball home, like, you know, I shifted my weight onto my left leg, my back leg, and it kind of locked up and gave out, and I knew something was wrong.
And then later you had the wrist injury too.
Yeah, so I ended up having two knee surgeries to come back from the knee injury, and then I'm literally 2 days away from going back to Sacramento to rejoin the team as a first baseman in the spring of 2011. And I swung and missed at a pitch in a minor league game in extended spring training, and I heard and felt a loud pop in my wrist. Just a swing and miss. I mean, it was a really kind of a freak thing, and it turns out I subluxed a tendon. I popped it out of the sheath that it kind of sits in and the bone, and it was, you know, I took the tape off my wrist. It was immediately swollen, and it was just a really absolutely devastating blow to be that close, go through all that rehab for the last 2 years and be 2 days away. They told me that morning I was 2 days away from rejoining the team. You know, just play today and tomorrow, and then you're out of here. And to be that close and then get injured, the timing of it was really difficult.
In the dark, quiet moments by yourself back then, Did you think that was it?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And I started looking at college courses again. I contacted my agent and I said, let's reach back out to the school, see if we can track down my old like athletic academic advisor and see what I need to do maybe to re-enroll. I only have two semesters left, you know. I could probably knock it out while I'm on the DL or in the off season or something, because I wasn't quite at the end of my rope, but I was really close, and it was time to, in my mind back then, it was time to start thinking of a contingency plan, but my head was spinning.
Yeah, but at least it was the right wrist and not the left, right?
That's right, and coincidentally, the knee that I injured was my left knee, which is now my post leg, you know, the most important part of your delivery. That's your base. So we got that fixed, and it was the right wrist, so silver linings, I guess, you know, allowed me to start this next chapter in my career.
Was it Keith Lippman who broached the subject of transitioning to try to become a pitcher again?
It was. Keith Lippman came up to me. This was about a week or so after I had injured my wrist, and they decided I didn't need surgery. They just kind of set it in a cast, and this cast went from the knuckles on my hand up past my elbow, so I was kind of my arm stayed bent at like a 45 degree angle. To give you a visual, it kind of looked like C-3PO, how he can't straighten his arms out, and I couldn't straighten my right arm out. And this was Arizona in the summer, man. It was itchy and it was hot. My arm was always sweaty. It was gross. But he came up to me and he was like, hey, how about you start a long toss program? And I kind of looked at him. I remember being like, what do you mean? Like, and he was like, well, it'll get you out of the training room. It'll give you something else to do rather than just, you know, your normal routine of DL life. And it'll kind of break up the monotony a little bit. And in his words, he said, in case we have to activate your insurance plan, you know, we won't have to start from scratch. We'll get you some arm strength built up. So it was interesting because I started this long toss program and I couldn't put a glove on my hand because of my wrist. I had this cast on, so I had to have somebody stand next to me and catch, like I was a quarterback warming up for a game or something.
Is that your brother?
It ended up being my brother in a weird twist of fate, weird turn of events. My brother ended up having to come down to Arizona because he strained a flexor tendon in his forearm, so he couldn't throw. So I could throw, but I couldn't catch. And he could catch, but he couldn't throw. So combined, we were like one healthy pitcher. But he ended up being kind of my catcher slash pitching coach slash therapist, essentially. We kind of...
Guru.
Guru, yeah. We kept each other in a good spot mentally, and we got to spend a lot of time together that summer. He was the guy that I relied on a lot while I was transitioning into pitching and trying to relearn a lot of that stuff.
I apologize in advance if this is a bizarre question, but you're a pretty introspective guy. Is the Sean Doolittle as a pitcher different from the Doolittle as a first baseman in terms of your personality or your identity as you see yourself as a ball player?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think as a... I never actually thought about this, but now that you said it, he was different. That guy was a lot more of a meathead, to be honest. I mean, you know, you're a first baseman, you like to you know, hit home runs and stuff. The guy was in the weight room a lot, doing a lot of bench press and bicep curls, that's for sure. I think the pitcher version of Sean Doolittle, you're right, is a lot more introspective and thinks a lot more and is more of an introvert.
So the ESPN.com article that came out that called you the most interesting man in baseball, that article doesn't get written if you're still a first baseman?
I don't think so. I would like to think that I would still be able to do some cool stuff and I would have done some special things both on the field and in this community. But I think when you go through something like that with the injuries, I think it changes your perspective. And if you're gonna find success after that, if you're gonna come out of that a better person, you have to change your perspective a little bit. You make some changes. You see things through a different lens, and you're more appreciative of certain opportunities that you have. And I think it changed me a lot. I think it changed me a lot for the better as a person, as well as obviously salvaging my career.
You seem to be someone who appreciates the fact that you have an intellectual curiosity.
Yeah, I guess I do. I mean, I never really thought about it, but I mean, I ask a lot of questions. I enjoy learning. I try to keep an open mind so that I can, get as much information and knowledge about anything really as possible. And yeah, when you're a relief pitcher, you have a lot of downtime. So I do have plenty of time for that.
Well, you and your girlfriend, Erin Dolan, you've been involved with some wonderful causes here. The LGBT night, raising funds for that. Syrian refugees and the dinner that you guys provided during this past off season in Chicago, all of your work with the veterans, it's so exemplary what you're doing. Where do you think all that came from?
I think a lot of it has to do with how I was raised. You know, I was raised in a military family, and that's something I'm very proud of. And there was a lot of teaching going on with my parents, and they were making sure that I was developing as a person and not just as an athlete. And I think when I got to the big leagues, I think I realized that I had a chance to give back and had an opportunity to maybe help some people, because as much as you might not realize it, like when you're going through it as a player, like you have a built-in platform. People will listen to you just because of the logo that's on the back of your hat. And it can seem kind of silly to say it, to put it that way, but at the end of the day, like, you can use it to help a lot of people and do a lot of good. So we just tried to make the most of this opportunity, both on and off the field.
Remember the whole thing with Charles Barkley years ago, whether athletes were a role model or who were the people who were role models? I've always felt, Sean, that we all are, that we all should try to we all can't live up to that, but try to live lives that can have a positive impact in our community and around the world, I guess.
Absolutely. I think as much as it's part of what comes with this job, it's part of the responsibility that you have, because whether you like it or not, people are looking up to you. People are watching your every move, and it can be a little stressful sometimes, knowing that everything you do is under a microscope. But I think you can also use it as a positive, like you said, and try to set a good example and be a good person and be a good teammate. I mean, trying to help your community, from the guys in your clubhouse to the people in your community, just being a good person, I think that rubs off on people, and it can create more good people, you know?
How do you combat that? Because with social media today, everybody analyzes everything that you do. And when there may be some criticism of stuff that you do, how do you deal with that?
Well, this year I actually deleted the apps off my phone, and I still have them on my iPad and stuff. If I need to get a message out, I can still do it, obviously. But I think it just got to a point where it can just be a distraction, and it can just be some negativity that you don't need. Even if you, and the thing with social media is there's so much stuff on there that even if you're not looking for it, you might just be scrolling through, like your name pops up and something, you read something negative about yourself, and no matter what you say, like, it affects you on some level. And if you see enough of them, like, it ends up inside your head, and it's just, it kind of takes the fun out of it. And you know, that's not something that I need right now. Nobody's going to be more critical of myself than I am. You know, nobody takes a blown save or a loss harder than I do. So rather than having to read other people's thoughts about the issue, I took it off my phone, and I decided, you know, it's time to put the blinders on and stay focused and really buckle down on working on some things that I have to change.
I think those kinds of things you're talking about can just be clutter.
Yeah.
They can get in the way of the vision of what you have for yourself.
Yes.
and who you want to be.
Exactly. I mean, like you said, like it just gets in the way. It's like dead weight. It's not helping you reach any of your goals. So much stuff on there isn't positive. And when you're I feel like I try to be like a happy person. I try to have I like good energy. I'm a big believer in that in that kind of stuff and positive energy and I just wasn't feeling it on there anymore, you know. There's a lot of positives for social media, the way that it can connect people and the things you can read and learn and stuff like that. But at the same time, there was also a lot of negativity on there that was just getting in the way.
Speaking of energy, one thing I was wondering about, because you make the transition to pitching, you start the year in the low minors, and you work your way up, and that happens really fast. Mm-hmm. You get to the big leagues, and now the A's are in a pennant race, and you're coming out of the bullpen in critical situations. The energy in those situations, those opportunities, what was that like for you to deal with that, because you really hadn't been pitching as a pro for that long?
You know what? I wish I could go back to that, to having that mindset, because I wasn't thinking about anything. I was enjoying the moment. I was doing so much of it by instinct and by feel. I wasn't thinking about when should I break my hands? What's my front side doing? Where should I start this guy off, inside or outside? I was just going out there and competing, because in a weird way, not to downplay it, but I kind of felt like I was playing with house money. I mean, I make the switch to pitching, and 3 months into the season, I'm in the major leagues. And I remember thinking to myself, like, as I'm jogging onto the field for my debut, like, I literally had to tell myself, like, we're going to see how this goes. I have no idea how my stuff's going to play at this level. I had just started pitching 3 months ago, and here I am in the Coliseum. I mean, it was a whirlwind experience, and I tried to enjoy it as much as I could. I tried to learn as much as I could. I worked hard, but I think that's the biggest thing. I look back on it sometimes, and especially, you know, when things aren't going right, like now. Sometimes you're out there and you find your brain's going 1,000 miles an hour in your head, and you're thinking about all these different things that you were thinking about when you were watching film the night before or something like that. But back then, man, 2012, when I was a rookie, all I was thinking about was competing and going out there and having fun. And I think that kind of allowed me to simplify things a little bit and have some success.
That's a beautiful thing, though, Beck, because you found the zen.
Yeah.
I guess there was no self-doubt. There were no ramifications.
Right.
Nothing crept in that got into your head other than I'm in the moment and I'm going to enjoy it. That's a pretty good lesson, I think.
I think now that I think about it, I think there's something to that, Ken. I'm gonna try that. I mean, I was having a conversation with some of the guys before, and less than 20,000 people have ever put on a major league uniform. Like, there's going to be more people than that at the game today. And I think when you think about that and you realize, it helps you realize the opportunity that you have to play in the major leagues and realize the moment and go out there and seize the moment and try to have as much fun with it as you can. Compete your butt off, continue to work hard, but go out there and just lay it all out there and see what happens.
Your life didn't end because you gave up a home run to Eric Hosmer.
It did not. The sun came up the next day and everything. Right. It was amazing. I couldn't believe it.
Hey, man, this has really been fun for me.
Thank you.
Really insightful. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay.